I'm going to let Gary sort of introduce himself in much more specific terms than I can. But the long and short of it is, Gary has a pretty amazing story to tell in terms of weight loss, sort of specifically, but all the things it takes to go from being a person who is struggling with weight and struggling with things in their life to someone who is running multiple 100-mile races a year and really doing some interesting things. His website, OutrunYourExcuses.com, I think kind of sums up what Gary's all about. And I'll turn it over to you, Gary, to sort of introduce yourself and let folks know what you're doing here on the Kenai.
Yeah, so I was brought up here to do the keynote for the marathon, and then I got put to work on a speaking tour, which has been fantastic. I've got to see so many places, meet so many people, and I just feel like I've been welcomed from the time I landed in Anchorage to I have to go home today, but it's been so great. I've had such a wonderful time while I'm here. The reason that people are interested in bringing me up here is 4 days before my son's fourth birthday, I stepped on the scale at 400 pounds. And I was scared. I didn't really know what to do. I had no idea about fitness and health. And so my most logical idea was to take a walk around the block. And I knew that taking a walk around the block would at least get me outside. And I knew that I had to do something about my eating. And so that's what I did. Over a very long period of time, I worked every single day to reteach myself how to eat and then how much to eat. And I started with walking around a block, and I just continued to walk a little bit farther every single day. And I walked for a year, just every single day. And I ended up losing about 110 pounds that first year, just walking and reteaching myself to eat proper foods in the proper amounts. So that's kind of the start of everything, and running didn't even take hold for a long time. So that's how I got started. And then at that year mark, I did start running. I saw a friend of mine do the Catch to 5K program. So I saw that if she could do it, I thought that I could do it. And just because she started in rough shape, just like I did. So I watched how she did it, and she started running a little bit at a time. So I decided that one day on my walk, I was going to go out and I was going to run for a block. And I used to go out first thing in the morning before the sun came up for a couple reasons. One, I was embarrassed, and two, because it was the best time that fit in my day. So that morning that I decided to run, I went out on a dirt road so that nobody could see me. And I started running, and it was awful. And even after a year of walking, it was still a huge struggle for me to get going and start moving and shuffling my feet faster. And I got to the point where I was ready to quit, and I noticed some warehouse workers that I was running by, and I got so scared that they were going to see me, and they were going to see me quit, and they were going to make fun of me, that I just kept going until I couldn't see them and couldn't hear them anymore. And after that first block, after I stopped running, I just walked and I cried for 2 miles home, because I had worked so hard to get to this point, and I couldn't get myself any farther. I couldn't run any farther than a block. So I decided that I was going to quit running that day, and I walked and I cried, and I ended up going through the rest of my day, and I found a million excuses to quit. And luckily, I woke up the next morning and decided to give it a second try. And so I decided I was going to run 2 blocks that day. And it was still miserable, it was still hard, but at least I had made the decision not to quit this time. And so I got through that 2 blocks, and throughout a month, I gained a little bit more every day, tried to run a little bit more every day, and it took me a month, but I ran my first mile without quitting, without stopping. And about 6 months later, I had slowly grown a little bit at a time. I ran 5 miles nonstop. And right around that time, one of my friends was going to run a half marathon, and her friend backed out on her. So I said, well, if she backed out, I'll do it with you. And then I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, wait a minute, what is a half marathon? And it's 13.1 miles and 5 and 13 are nowhere close to each other. And
it's just a lot of those city blocks stacked on each other. That's all, just block after block after block.
Eventually, I wasn't thinking of it that way at that time. I was thinking 5 times 2 is 10, and we're still not there.
Right.
So at that point in time, work got busy, and the summer got busy, so I kind of fell off my training, and we ended up going out a week before to run 8 miles, or we went out to run 10 miles. At 7, we decided we were going to quit. Somewhere after 7, we decided to go ahead and keep going. We made it to 8, and so then we were discussing whether or not we were either even going to show up to the half marathon and give it a try. And so we decided to go ahead and try it out, and we figured, you know, worst thing we have to do is, you know, quit and fail. So we did it, and we ended up finishing. And when I crossed the finish line at the half marathon, I realized kind of where I had came from and what I had done, and 13 miles was theoretically impossible for me. So then it got my mind going, well, if this guy, if anybody in the world can run 13 miles, I wonder if I could run a marathon. So I decided, I set my goal to run a marathon, and I ended up getting signed up for it, and I ran a marathon the next year. And shortly after the marathon, I turned 31, and so I ended up running. I went to the mountains and ran 31 miles for my 31st birthday, which was pretty phenomenal. It was beautiful. It was where I discovered my love for running, because I was always taught that you run around a track or you run in town. And the fact that you could just go to the middle of the mountains and you could just let yourself be free to go wherever you wanted, to hit any trail you wanted. I saw the sunrise from the top of a mountain that morning. And that was the day that I fell in love with running. It was no longer I have to get out my door. It's I get to get out my door and go for a run. And so that day was a really big shift for me. And once I decided that I wanted to do this and I wanted to get out of the door and I wanted to have more energy to be able to run farther, I found that there was this thing called a 50-mile race. And I didn't really know that before, but I found it. And it was in Leadville, Colorado, which is the highest incorporated town in the U.S.
Right.
10,000 feet. And so this 50-mile race, most people think 50 miles would be, you know, on a road that's super flat. Well, this goes from 10,000 feet over a 12,000-foot mountain, back down to 10,000 feet, back over a 12,000-foot mountain, back down to 10,000 feet, and then you turn around and you come back. And so it's pretty hard.
It's a big deal. So I'm really interested in getting into what you're thinking and feeling as this process is really getting off the ground. I wanted to first, though, kind of back up. You're from Colorado originally, grew up there?
I grew up in Wyoming.
Grew up in Wyoming, okay. And talk maybe, what was your childhood like? What did you do in Wyoming? Where did you grow up there?
I grew up in a small town, Wheatland, which is much similar. It's very similar to the city, to the town of Kenai. So I think that's one reason I felt so welcome and so home here. And so yeah, farming community. There's a farm. There's a bunch of farming. There's a coal power plant, and then there's the city and the schools. That's what keeps it going.
Yeah. And so were you an athlete in high school? Did you what was high school like?
I grew up obese my entire life. I weighed 215 pounds when I was in seventh grade. I wanted to play football. I wanted to be an athlete. I just wasn't. I wasn't good at it. I was diagnosed with asthma when I was in seventh grade, so I always thought that was something that was going to hold me back. And being big, you know, that was celebrated as a lineman. You know, the bigger the better.
Sure.
And so it was always, being obese was always part of my identity. All my nicknames were created
right.
Based on being obese. I was Cream Puff, and then Hoss, which means gentle giant. And so growing up in high school, I got made fun of a lot when I was a kid for being obese. And then when I got to high school, it kind of became accepted because I was a lineman and I was mediocre at sports. I wasn't great. I wasn't terrible. And when I did wrestling my senior year, and the heavyweights, you had to weigh under 275 pounds to be able to wrestle. Well, I had to lose 25 pounds to be able to wrestle mm-hmm. and make weight. So I did that, and I ended up getting hurt my senior year during wrestling. And so I just kind of, I continued eating the way that I had always eaten. And so that wasn't very helpful, and I wasn't working out like I had been working out. So, you know, when I graduated high school, I reluctantly went to college. I wasn't very smart in high school. I didn't really care about school. And so going to college meant I get to go party.
Right.
And that's what I was thinking. So when I got to college, that's what I did. I partied like a rock star. And for anyone that's seen Varsity Blues, the movie, there's a guy named Billy Bob on there. Gets really, you know, he's a drunk. He's really big, and he wears a cowboy hat, and he's the life of the party. Well, Billy Bob became my nickname in college, to the point where no one knew my real name. I was Billy Bob because I was the life of the party. I was this extremely shy person in day-to-day life. And then when I started drinking, I became this really loud and fun person.
Pretty classic scenario in a lot of ways. And it's something that I imagine you feel maybe not necessarily pressure to just accept that identity that's been sort of thrust upon you. But it's sometimes easier than facing the things about yourself that you're not necessarily so into.
You're absolutely right. And it's not even, I don't even know if it was something I was conscious of.
Right.
It's just, I wasn't popular in high school. I didn't fit in anywhere. So when I got to college and all of these people celebrated who I was, I just thought I was me. And so there was no reason for me to change who I was, whether that's the way I looked, whether that's my actions, whether it was my interactions. People just liked who I was. And for the first time in my life, it felt really good to be, for people to like me for who I was. Growing up in a small town and not being popular, I didn't know who I was. And so, I mean, I tried everything in high school to try to fit in. And that means everything that you try in high school to fit in.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, but I just never found that spot. And then when I got to college and I found this person that I thought I was at the time, I was having a good time. People liked me, and so there was zero reason for me to change. And I noticed that every time I did try to change, I would pull myself back into my comfort zone. And that carried me on through college. And even in, you know, after I graduated from college, I still had this mindset of who I had been in college. And so I didn't really want to change that. I mean, nobody really ever wants to grow up.
Right. And hey, that was working pretty well there for a while, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I was shy in high school. I was shy as when I was sober in college, I was really shy. And then I took a sales job at Toyota because I graduated December of 2008, a couple weeks after the stock
market. Oh, that's crashed. A great time to, roughly the same time for me as well. That was a fantastic time to be looking for jobs.
Yeah. So I had two options. I had selling cars at Toyota and I had McDonald's. And I had worked, don't get me wrong, I worked food service my entire high school and college career. I was just tired of it. I wanted to try something new. So the most logical thing for someone that isn't very outgoing and isn't very smart and intelligent is to sell cars. So that's what I did. And 3 months in, I hadn't sold anything yet. And I wasn't thinking about the economy. I was just thinking I'm desperate to, you know, get a job, and I'm desperate to do something. So 3 months in, I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay rent. I was trying to figure out how I was going to feed myself. I had a baby that was born in March. And so I was trying to figure out how that was going to work. And so I walked into my boss's office and I said, "Do you have a book or anything that you can give me so I can learn how to do this? Because I really want to sell a car. I really want to get good at this." And so he handed me a book, and 7 years of college, I never finished a book. I didn't take school very serious, and I didn't really enjoy most of my classes. So when he handed me this book, and I read it cover to cover in 8 hours, and it was the first time that a couple things happened. One, it was the first time I enjoyed something enough to finish it, especially a book, and I enjoyed the attitude of the author. And I enjoyed the ideas of the author. And he had a very positive attitude the entire book. Him and I had a very similar background. I was able to relate to him on a level that I had never been able to relate to someone, and then correlate their story with what they overcame to become successful. And for the first time in my life, I thought, well, this guy and I, this guy came from the very similar background as me, and now he's extremely successful. And so I was able to... I almost had a mentor just in a book. And so I found out that if you get good at sales, if you get good at, you know, making money, you get good at customer service, you get good at talking to people, you get good at just going out and failing and
then
picking yourself up and continuing on, that you can make yourself a success. It doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter, you know, what your college degree is. It doesn't matter this or that and the other thing. It's what you do today that will get you better for tomorrow. And so the biggest thing that he taught me is nothing is impossible. And this had everything to do with business and growing as a person. But for the first time in my life, I had somebody that I could look up to that told me it was impossible, and I actually believed him. And so I walked into my boss's office. I gave him that book back. I said, "Hey, do you have another one?" And he gave it to me. And what's really cool is the owner of Toyota is a very intelligent person, and he has a library that you wouldn't believe. And so I got into a habit of, he would bring me a book and I would read it, and he would bring another book and put it in his box. And then when I was done, I would just flip out books. Mm-hmm. And so I got to the point where I was reading a book a week, and I was just enjoying how much information I could learn, because there's so many books on success. There's so many books on business. There's so many books on sales. And there's just so much information and so much knowledge. And I was always taught you have to have math, because at some point in time you might think about using it. And to this day, I still have a calculator and have a computer that can do everything that I need with math. But there was no class on sales. There right. was no class on personal development. There was no class that was actually going to teach me how to be successful in the business world. And so I essentially just gave myself that education, and I just don't have a college degree for it because it doesn't exist.
Right. School of Hard Knocks is what a lot of people might refer to that as. Gary Stotler joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you have questions, comments, stories about your own experience you'd like to share, 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. You can drop us a line on Facebook as well. We'll be checking that throughout the program. So, Gary, I kind of want to stick with this. We're now out of college. We're selling cars. We're trying to figure out how to stay up in the rat race. Finally, getting some perspective and reading some books and getting some ideas on maybe how to approach things, how to think about things a little bit differently. How do we get to? As I was browsing through your website again, outrunyourexcuses.com, you have a story in there about getting to a pretty dark and pretty low place. How do we get to that place and then back out of it?
Absolutely. So I got really good at the reading and the learning, and I got really good at business. I got really good at sales. And so throughout this entire time, I was spending a lot of time at work. I got really good. I was the number one salesperson at Toyota for years and years. I was also one of the sales managers. So I was really, really good at my job, and it was great to be good at business, but I was a mediocre person at home, and my fitness life was non-existent, and my weight kept climbing. As you can imagine, you know, selling cars is extremely stressful, and the alcohol use was, you know, you go out to work and have a couple drinks after work, and you eat McDonald's and you eat fast food because you only have 10 or 15 minutes mm-hmm. for lunch. And so my weight just kept climbing, and I wasn't really doing anything about it, and it just wasn't a priority. And so eventually I got to the point in 2012 where I was about 375 pounds, and I went to Vegas for a conference for social media and for correlating social media and selling cars together. So I went out, and Grant Cardone, the guy, the very first book that I read, he was there, and he did an hour long presentation, and I sat in the front row and I just watched him, and I said, I'm going to learn as much as I can from this guy. And so I eyes glued. It was a lights out presentation, and I was just floored with the information and his energy. And it was just an awesome experience. And so afterward, I went to the expo. And I went out, and I was like, I have to meet this guy, and I just want to tell him thank you, because he's helped me a ton. So I walked up to him, and I'm 6'2", and he's about 5'4", 5'5". And so I'm standing there talking to him, and this guy's a multimillionaire, and he gave me 30 seconds of his time. And he made me feel like I was the only person in the world for that 30 seconds. And I just got so excited, because he gave me, you know, it was a positive conversation, and he accepted my thank you, and he gave me some words of encouragement. So I just got really excited. And so I stepped back and I watched him for about 10 minutes interact, and every single person that came up to him, he treated everyone the exact same way. And so I told myself, I want to be just like this guy. And so I wrote down all my goals, and I said, okay, this is what I need to do to be like this guy. And one of the goals was to have more energy. When I met him, I put up this whole big plan together on how I was going to make all these positive life changes. And as I was putting that plan together, my life was kind of going downhill. And so it was after I met him, I went back, and with the energy that he gave me, I had my best month ever at Toyota. And so that was October. So November was my best month ever at Toyota. And then as December came, I started to fall off. I lost that energy that he gave me. And I felt like I was on my own as far as energy and goals. And I just fell down. I felt like I fell down the face of a mountain, for lack of a better term. And so January came, February came, and I just continued to deteriorate. And then in March is when I stepped on the scale at 400 pounds. And so I had taken all of that knowledge and used it for business, but everything that I had learned, everything that I had taken, I hadn't done anything with my fitness and health. So I took the concept of just starting a little bit at a time, and that's how I got the idea of walking around the block. And so going through that, walking around the block in the year and the 2 years, running the first marathon, and then getting into the 50-mile race, when I ran the 50-mile race, it was a highlight of my running career. It was kind of a highlight of my life. I had hit this peak in my life where everything had kind of ebbed and flowed, and I'd had some extreme ups and some extreme downs. And every time I had an adversity, I learned how to pick myself up and climb up a little bit bigger mountain. And then I'd get to the top of a mountain, and then I would just fall down again, and I would hit adversity. And so that was the cycle of my life. The only problem is when I ran the 50-mile race, I was expecting to just continue to go up instead of knowing that something rough was going to come. And so when I finished the 50-mile race, I got a coin so I could bypass the lottery into the 100-mile race. And so my focus was on this 100-mile race. And where the dark spot came from is, if you can imagine how physically difficult it is to lose 200 pounds. It's very, very hard. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of focus. It takes a lot of changes. It takes a lot of adversities, overcoming adversities. But as physically hard as it is to lose 200 pounds, it's harder to mentally lose 200 pounds, because I could ask you what you see in me today, and it would be, you would see something completely different in me than if I would look in the mirror and describe myself. And so I still, even to this day, I still have a hard time looking in a mirror and seeing what's actually there. I still look in the mirror and see a 400 pound man standing there. And so after I finished that 50 mile race, things got really hard in life. I had realized that I had been an emotional eater my entire life, and I took away the one thing that filled me up. And then running became the replacement for food. And so at one point, running was no longer filling me up. And then I had slowly drifted into alcohol use to fill me up, and the alcohol use became alcohol abuse. And there was a point when the eating, the running, and the alcohol was no longer filling anything. And I hit a very, very dark spot in life. It was the summer before before Leadville. So the summer of 2016, or excuse me, 2017. And I woke up one morning and I was scared and alone. And I had decided to give up on my life. And so I sat down to write a letter explaining that. And for some reason, in the back of my head, I knew that I couldn't do it. There was so much more to live for. I didn't know what it was. I just didn't know. So the only logical thing that I could think of other than jumping off the mountain was just climbing it and getting to the top and crying my eyes out and hoping something came of it. And so that's what I did. I drove from Wyoming to Leadville, and I climbed my favorite mountain, and I got to the top, and I screamed and I cried. And when I came down, I felt a little bit better, but my life, it really didn't do anything for my life. So I kind of struggled through the next couple weeks. And during Leadville 2017, I ended up drinking 3 bottles of Fireball during the first 70 miles. And so, you know, running was hard, and the using of alcohol was hard, and the life position that I was in was very difficult. And so when I quit at mile 69, I was lucky I was only quitting a race and I wasn't quitting my life. And when I hit that point, I remember like it was yesterday, driving, my crew came to pick me up at the aid station and they were driving out, and it was the middle of the night. And all I could see was the light bouncing off the trees. And I was just sitting there in absolute awe. And I couldn't believe that I had let myself get this low in life. I couldn't believe the person that I had become. And I was lost in my life. And I felt like I was all alone. I had alienated anyone that ever loved me. And there was I didn't know of anyone in the world that understood what I was going through at that time. I have friends that have lost extreme amounts of weight, and I have friends that have run a lot of miles, that have run 100 miles, but I didn't know anyone that had lost 200 pounds and run 100 miles and essentially became somebody completely different. And then before they even had a chance to catch up with that person, became someone completely different again. And my friends, my family, they woke up and they had no idea who I was. I woke up and had no idea who I was. And if you can imagine being lost in your own mind and you can't explain it to anybody, you don't feel like you can talk to anybody, and you've always been told that, you know, going to therapy is something that's for weak people. And so I felt like I was just alone, absolutely, with the voices in my own head, that's where I was. A week after Leadville, I was trying to recover from losing in my mind, losing the race. And I woke up on a Saturday morning and realized I'd made a very, very big mistake after a night of drinking. And I decided right then and right there, I looked at myself in the mirror and said, "You have too much to lose." And so I quit drinking on the spot. And when I decided to quit drinking, that was the only logical thing I could think of at that time. That was my first step to recovering my life. That was the very first thing that I knew had to go, because if I knew that if I could quit drinking, I could clear my head enough to take the next step. So my original goal was to quit drinking for 3 weeks. And so I went through the first week, I did great, I went through the second week, the third week, and when I got through the third week, I said, "I'm going to quit drinking for another week, and then I'm going to celebrate at the end with a beer." I mean, it's just, you know, when I grew up, you celebrate with food, and then I celebrated with alcohol. And so I told myself it on the 30th day, we're going to go out and we're going to have a beer and we're going to celebrate. I couldn't have a beer on the 30th day. I said, "Wow, I just quit drinking for a month. I wonder if I could do it for 2 months." And at the end of 60 days, I knew I was done drinking, because I had cleared my head in a way that it had never been that clear before. And so then once I cleared my head from the alcohol, then I started clearing my head with the rest of my life. I actually did go see a therapist, and I did talk to somebody, and I shed a lot of tears, and I started searching for anyone that I could think of or anyone that could lead me to someone else that I could talk to that might help me be able to understand. So through all of this, I ended up switching careers. And in December 2017, I was slowly kind of getting my life back together. And I realized the career that I had switched into wasn't for me. And so I was going to quit in January. And my boss just beat me to the punch. And so right before Christmas, she fired me. And which was okay. It was something that I think we both knew was coming. I just needed that one more paycheck to get going.
Right.
And I know that that's sad to think of.
Well, it's a pretty crummy time of year to be out of work.
It is. Yeah. It's a crummy time of year. And I knew, like, I had this goal of if I can just get this much money saved, then it'll kind of get me to that next step. But yeah, she beat me to the punch. And so a couple weeks before Christmas, I got fired. And so I went and spent a couple weeks with my boys. I was like, if I'm going to be unemployed, I'm going to go spend some time with my boys, because they're out of school and I get one-on-one attention. So as I was spending time with them, I started thinking, I've had this idea of, you know, running my own company. I've had an idea of speaking. I've had an idea of writing a book. I've had all of these ideas, and I've always been so consumed with making money. I've always consumed with running. I've been consumed with doing all of these other things except doing something that actually makes me happy. And so I started putting together a plan, and I started saying, okay, what is the first step that I need to do? And my idea was I need to get to a bigger place out of Wyoming so I can talk to more people that are interested in running and interested in furthering their business. And so for a couple of weeks, I planned and strategized, and I thought. And then right after Christmas, some life changes happened very drastically, and I said, you know what? I'm out of here. So I filled up my car with gas, and I had less than $50 in my checking account, and I moved to Denver. And it was the scariest thing ever, because it's October and I still don't have a home there. With the graciousness of friends, I've been sleeping on couches. I've been sleeping in extra rooms. I've been sleeping in, I do some work for a hotel, so they will hook me up with a room and a shower every once in a while. And I did a lot of camping this summer in the middle of the mountains just so I could run. And so I took a chance. And for the first time in my life, I took a chance on myself. And so slowly and surely, I've started building my business, and I've continued running, and I've continued helping people, and I've traveled all over the U.S. this year, talking to people, helping people. People have helped me with things that I needed, and some of it's just been a mutual exchange of information. And so throughout this entire year, nothing crazy and ludicrous has happened, but all of these small things have happened throughout the entire year to put me where I am today. And that's in a good mental spot. That's speaking to wonderful people all over the country and hopefully all over the world someday, and getting to share my story with people and letting them know that, one, they're not alone. There's someone out there that cares, and there's someone out there that's been through it, and there's someone out there that has had the same adversity as you, and they've overcome it. And if you are willing to open up a little bit and show some vulnerability and ask questions, someone is there to guide you through the tough parts of your life. You don't have to be alone. You don't have to give up. You can just, if you can just take that first step, don't be overwhelmed with how far you have to go. Just figure out what that first step is for you. And for me, running 100 miles is my goal. For some reason, I had this idea that if I could run 100 miles, I could do whatever I wanted in my life. For some people that I talk to, the hardest thing, that their only goal is to get off of their couch for 7 days, because that's where they are in their life. And it took me 166,000 steps to finish Leadville this year. But this first step that I took off my couch was the most important step I've ever taken in my life. And for most people, that first step is that one thing that's keeping them from where they are and the first step to all of their dreams.
Gary Stotler joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, sharing his story of sort of reinvention, I think would maybe be a good word for it. And something it's maybe not so uncommon to hear folks with stories of losing a lot of weight for one reason or another, but buried under that headline of going from one number to another number is the change that you're talking about right here, struggling with the internal change of literally becoming physically a new person and having to deal with that on a psychological level, on an emotional level. And that's something that maybe doesn't get enough attention, I think, sometimes.
You're absolutely right. So through the graciousness of the universe, a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend through social media introduced me to a guy named Dr. Mondo in California. And he studied the Biggest Loser contestants for his research when he was getting all of his therapy licenses. And somehow I got introduced to this guy. And one hour conversation, he realized that he was talking to somebody that needed help. And I realized that I was talking to somebody that actually knew what was going on in my world. And so after chatting with him for a long time, you know, several texting conversations and a couple more interviews back and forth, what I learned from him is there's actually a psychological process that we go through when we make drastic changes.
Drastic and dramatic.
Drastic and dramatic changes. And it's not only weight loss. It's when people overcome drug and alcohol abuse, when people go through, you know, big changes in life. You know, that could be marital changes, it could be work changes, it could be, you know, they lose a limb or they get injured or they win the lottery. All of these things change us beyond something that we can comprehend. So there's a psychological process we go through. And statistically, if you lose over 100 pounds, you only have a 5% chance of keeping it off.
Mm-hmm.
And where that statistic comes from is everyone gets so focused on the body weight that they forget about the mind weight and all of the stress on the mind. So you literally, and this is Dr. Mondo's term, but you have to rewrite your story and you have to understand your past, you have to accept your present, and you have to rewrite your future. And by doing that, you also have to renegotiate your relationships with other people, because not only are you struggling with who you are becoming, but the people around you are struggling with who you're becoming. My mom she only knew me as her sweet boy who, you know, was innocent and who was this cute, chubby young man. And when I became this extremely fit person, she still saw me as the little boy that I had always been. And so that's one of our relationship struggles, is she doesn't understand who I am. And I can't somehow, for some reason, can't explain who I am.
How does that manifest itself? Is it like you go home and there's the tray of cookies and milk, like you were a little kid, and it's just not helpful, or how does that manifest itself?
That's a phenomenal question. So I used to go to my mom's every Sunday for dinner or lunch, whatever you want to call it. And when I was going through this fitness and health journey, I had to change the type of food that I ate. Mm-hmm. And where did I learn my food habits? I learned them from growing up. And my mom hasn't changed the type of food that she's fixed, you know, since I was a little kid. So when I would stress that I need different food, she would never make different food. And so then I would bring my own food and then she would make snide comments about it. And so then I would start going to dinner less. And eventually you naturally spend less time together because I got tired of fighting the food. I have to fight every time I go to the store. I have to walk by the cookie aisle and tell myself, you really shouldn't buy those cookies. And so I get tired of telling myself no. And when I go out somewhere, I don't want to have to tell myself no any more than I have to. And so when I went to my mom's house, the habit was to sit down and eat a ton of food and to eat whatever was put in front of you. And so it was easier for me to not go and not have to fight myself. So naturally, when you spend less time with someone, you distance from that person. And then things just naturally progress. Next mm-hmm. thing you know, it's been 6 months and you haven't seen your mom because every time you see her, it's surrounded by food. And that's what my family does. We celebrate, you know, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthdays, all of these special occasions.
Roll out the barrel.
Yeah. You're surrounded by food. And when I didn't understand that my fight with food was so bad. And what I mean, I don't mean that, you know, food is bad. I just mean, I didn't realize how much I struggled with food and my self-esteem around food. If I go to a restaurant, I have a hard time eating with people. If I am at home, then I don't have to worry about anyone judging me on how I eat. And every time I go to a business event and there's food, I look around and I automatically think that everyone is judging me because I'm either not eating because the food isn't something that I usually eat, or when I do eat, I feel like they're judging me. And so this internal conversation of ping pong in my head of, should I eat? Should I not eat? Is this the right thing? And so I get tired of that.
I'm glad you brought that up. And I want to get into some of the sort of mechanics of this, some of the training and some of the dietary changes, because we're zipping right through this hour, of course, as I kind of thought we might this morning here on the Kenai Conversation with Gary Stotler, talking about his story and his journey from pretty serious obesity and some dark places in life to now here in Kenai to run the Kenai River Marathon and do a couple of radio interviews and share this story and hopefully inspire some folks along the way. But before the show, you and I were talking a little bit about this idea that, and you just brought it up, is this idea that every day you're faced with a number of choices, and I guess in talking about how do you deal with facing all those choices? I mean, simple things like going to the grocery store and avoiding stuff that you know isn't going to help you get where you want to be. Do you ever feel overwhelmed by how many times you have to make that choice every day? You said you try to put yourself in a position where you're not saying no so often, but how do you get to that spot?
That's a great question. So when I started out, I would put together a grocery list, and I would go to the store and I would only get what was on the grocery list. There was no, oh, I forgot to put this on the grocery list, I'm just going to grab it. It's on the grocery list, that's what I can get, no extra. So I taught myself not to buy it, because I knew as soon as I bought it and it went in my house, all my willpower and all my self-control went out the window, and I would sit down with a bag of Oreos and I would eat them. And then it was almost like I would wake up and think, oh my gosh, I just ate an entire package of Oreos. And so I learned not to buy it at the store. And so that was the easiest thing at that time for me to do, because I understood myself enough to know that at the store I have control. At home, I'm just used to not having the control over, you know, I can go to the cupboard, I can eat whatever I want. There's a reason it's there to eat. So that was the first thing, is just controlling what was brought into the house. As I've learned more and more through the years, I've learned a lot about willpower and I've learned a lot about habits. And so what the most important thing that I've learned about willpower and habits is, you have the willpower is like a muscle. So if you think of going out and you go to the gym and you throw a bunch of weight on the squat rack and you do a bunch of squats or push-ups or bench press, you're actually tearing your muscles. And then as they recover, they build back stronger. Well, your brain is the same way. Your willpower is a muscle. So as you use your willpower, then it tears. And so throughout the day, you're tearing your willpower down. So if you've ever noticed, 3 o'clock, you don't really care anymore because you've used all of your willpower throughout the day. So if you're trying to change something, if you think about trying to change everything in your life, you know, let's say that we make somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 decisions a day. And right, my eyes rolled with that as well. But about 70 to 75% of our decisions are habitual, so we don't even think about it. And so if you think about, let's take that 30,000 down to 10, because 10's a much more manageable number. So if you had 10 decisions that you had to make for today, and if you changed all 10 of those decisions, you'd get through about 4 of them before your willpower is just completely taxed. And so you would make 4 positive decisions, and then the other 6, you would just make whatever decisions your brain was on autopilot for. So you can change all 10, and then you can come in at about a 40% winning ratio. Or out of those 10 habits, you could pick the very most important habit that you do first thing in the morning, and you could change that one. Because now you only have to tax your willpower for one thing, or 10% of your day. And by doing that for 30 days, then you create a habit. And as we were talking before, glaciers are a perfect, perfect analogy for this. So if you think of how mountains, especially around here, you have beautiful glaciers everywhere, beautiful mountains everywhere, but those mountains just didn't pop up one day. They were built over thousands and thousands, possibly millions of years.
Right.
And so as the glacier slides down, it creates this groove in the mountain. And so your brain is the exact same way. Your brain has grooves, and those grooves never, ever go away. You have to change the very first part, the very first cue is what they call it. And then once that cue happens, then you have to change the action. So essentially you would take that glacier and send it down a different mountain range. Instead of going to the left, it would go off to the right. So for 30 days, you change the direction of that glacier. And then as that glacier scoots down, it's going to create a larger crevice and down an entirely different path. So that's what that habit starts to do, 30 days, 60 days. And after a year, you can imagine that habit is completely different. But it only started with one. And you don't just do one and expect your entire life to change. But if you do that first one for 30 days, and you get really good at doing that one thing every day for 30 days, Then you go on that 31st day, you continue doing the first habit the same way, and you add a second one. So now you're working on 20% of your day, and you do that for 30 days. And so now you have a habit for 60 and a habit for 30. And then after 60 days for that third month, you add a third habit, or you use your willpower for that third thing for 30 days. So now if you think of a pyramid, now you have a three-part pyramid. So it only takes you 10 months to change all 10 of those habits. And you pick them out one at a time. And I like to win. And so I set myself up to win. And that's why I choose one, is because I know that I can handle changing one thing at a time because my focus goes there. But if you give me 10 things, I will bounce back and forth between all 10 and I won't succeed at anything. I won't even get to that 40% winning percentage. So you can change all 10 of those habits in 10 months if you're just willing to take them one at a time, rather than trying to take all 10 of them at once and being there at the end of the year thinking, wow, I didn't really accomplish anything this year. So, and as you start to win 30 days at a time, you get to 90 days and you will feel like a different person. I coach people from all over the world. And this is the concept that we use. We change that one keystone habit that we need to do first thing in the morning. And by 90 days, they have such a streak going that they feel like they can do anything because they've been winning for 3 months. And if you've ever tried to change, if you've ever tried to quit smoking, if you've ever tried to quit drinking, if you've ever tried to quit doing drugs, if you've ever tried to start running or working out or eating properly, it's hard. For 30 days, it's like super, super hard. And to go through that 30 days and fail, it doesn't feel very good. So why would you set yourself up to fail? If you really want to do something, set yourself up to win and just chunk it out. Do something that you can do today. Yes, you have to check your ego at the door and you have to realize this is where I am today and this is what I can do today. And if you accept that and you start working from there and you check that first box off for 30 days, next thing you know, after 60, you check two. After 10 months, you're an entirely different person. And it's very simple. And someone once told me what's simple to do is also simple not to do. But
that's the flip side of it, because as we were talking about, it still comes down to a choice that you have to make.
Exactly. And most people want instant results. And
was that ever a struggle for you? Did you drop, 20, 30 pounds and see it sort of, because 20, 30 pounds, I don't care how big you are, you lose 20, 30 pounds, you can start to see it. Maybe you can see the veins in your hand a little bit, or you can see your cheekbones a little bit. Did you get to a point where early on where you noticed some change and found it difficult to maintain those decisions, or did that serve as fuel to continue making them? And then, as we talked about, it's sort of one step forward, two steps back a little bit. But did you find some inspiration in those little incremental things? Or
so there's two ways to answer that question. One is I knew there was a process, and I believed in, I didn't believe in myself, but I believed in the process. And I knew that if I just continued doing these things, that eventually they would work. And the only reason that I believed in that is because I've watched people in business succeed. And that's how I succeeded in business, was there's a process. And if you just follow the process enough times, you eventually become successful because it's the laws of nature. And so answer number one is, even during the setbacks, even when I didn't see the scale going down, even when I didn't see all of these instant results, I knew I was there for the long term and I knew I was there for the process. So was it frustrating? Yes, absolutely. Was it devastating some days to step on the scale and know that I had went 30 days absolutely perfect? I had done everything I knew I needed to do, and to gain 5 pounds, it was devastating. But what kept me going is I was there for the long term. And I was also there for the energy, not for the scale. Now, don't get me wrong. I have issues with the scale. I stepped on the scale 25 times a day. I was obsessed with the scale. But I also knew that there was something greater than the scale on the other side if I just kept going. Now, to your other point of, you lose 20, 30 pounds. When you're 400 pounds, you don't have to change everything. If you change something positive, whether it's eating or physical fitness, Even as simple as walking, something is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And at 400 pounds, I think I lost 20 pounds within about 10 or 15 days. I mean, it was very drastic. It was very fast.
The first little bit can come off pretty rapidly. You've got a lot to lose.
You do have a lot to mm-hmm. lose. And you're right. It's very easy to lose that 20 pounds. And so with that, there was some excitement and there was, hey, that's awesome. I did a really good job. But after 15 days, nothing happens for 15 days.
Then the real work starts.
Exactly. And so that's why I knew that the process was more important than the results. But going through that for 30 days, then you say, okay, so here's, and I tracked everything. Because I'm coming from sales, if you want to change something, you track it, you write it down. So that's what I did. I tracked everything. So when I got to the second month, you know, I lost some weight and then I hit this plateau. And then when I got to the third month, I lost some weight and I hit this plateau. But what I figured out was by tracking everything and keeping track of it, I would lose, you know, maybe 10, 15 pounds in 3 weeks. And then I would go through this 3 week span for a plateau. And it was like clockwork. You couldn't have made it up. It was that predictable. But the concept that I thought about is your body has to catch up to the weight loss. And so, I mean, I talk to all sorts of people and I coach all sorts of people, and I do coach someone that has had the weight loss surgery, and she lost, 150 pounds or more.
I mean, like that.
Yeah. Very, very fast. And so that's great, but you still have to change your habits, because if you don't, then you go back to the person you've always been, because you have to go through and you have to be mindful of what mm-hmm. you're eating and you have to be mindful of the exercise. And so my body didn't have the weight loss surgery and it didn't have the special diet. And it was always said, okay, we're losing weight. Something's wrong here. And your brain kicks into survival mode. So it's always trying to bring you back to that original weight. And so what I figured out was my body would lose 15, 20 pounds, and then it had to essentially reset itself for a couple weeks. And then I would lose, you know, 15, 20 pounds, and then I had to reset myself for a couple weeks. And so if you look at it, it's literally stair steps down.
Yeah.
And once I got to about a year, I figured that out. And so that gave me hope that I'm doing everything right.
And you can almost factor that into the plan that you are working on every day.
Then that's exactly what I did. I just knew that, yes, there's going to be days where I go perfect and I gain weight because maybe I had more water than, you know, in the last week. And then, you know, sometimes you're going to feel like you screwed up and you're going to lose weight. So there's actually no direct correlation between how you did yesterday and what the scale says today. There, you have to look back about 4 to 6 weeks to figure that out. There's always a lag period between what you do and the actual results that show up. It's just one of the laws of nature. I mean, you plant corn and it doesn't show up the next day.
Right.
You have to wait months and you have to water it every day and you have to go out and you have to make sure it gets sunlight and you have to hope that the hail doesn't hit it. And you just follow the same laws. But if you plant thistle, you can't expect corn. You can't eat Oreos and expect to be a fit athlete.
You don't get a six pack from that.
You don't get a six pack from that. No. I don't care how many sit-ups you do or push-ups you do. There's no correlation between those.
Yeah. Well, gosh, we're blowing through. We've just got a few minutes left here with Gary Stotler this morning on the Kenai Conversation. I did want to ask this, though. You talked about the idea that the number on the scale isn't the end-all be-all. I'm curious, with you in your journey and where you are now, how do you quantify where you're at and where you need to go? If the scale and the number on the scale and the weight as that basic metric is no longer sort of the most important thing or the thing to focus on, how do you measure progress, or do you even measure really progress at this point anymore? Is it so, have your habits changed sufficiently that it's just sort of how it is?
Do we have another hour? So that's a...
We got about 3 minutes.
All right. That's a great question. So I have, ever since that first 2 years, I lost most of my weight. So I've been about the same weight for the past couple years. Mm-hmm. And so for a long time, that was very hard because I had this number in my mind that I knew that if I could get to this number, I would feel better. And I've never got to that number, by the way. I'm still about 35 pounds. And so earlier this year, one of my friends brought me in for like a body test so I could get my fat percentage and my muscle mass and all of that stuff. And I was at 11% body fat. And as we were talking, if I would have ever tried to get to that body weight number that I wanted to be at, I would have killed myself because it's physically impossible. I would have zero fat on my body, and that's not good for you.
Right.
So that was an eye-opening situation. And I have more energy than anyone would know what to do with. When I wake up in the morning, I can go as fast and as far, and I can, you know, when I run 10 miles, I have more energy when I'm done than when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I quantify how I'm doing. If I feel sluggish, it means that I haven't been eating properly. If I feel great, it means that I'm on point. And I had a goal about 2 years ago. I set a goal to be able to wake up and run a marathon any day of the week. And I can. And so, you know, I ran 100 miles about 6-7 weeks ago. And then to be able to come up here and still be sore and still, you know, still kind of be recovering from that and run a marathon in Kenai, that's how I quantify how I'm feeling and how I'm doing.
That's a pretty great way to wrap it up. If you're able to run a marathon, you're doing pretty well for yourself.
Yeah. And right. You know, just remember that sometimes getting off the couch was that thing that made me feel energy for the day.
And you know, I don't want to make it sound like a horrible cliche. It is a bit of a cliche, but you know, things like that are true for a reason, that the longest journeys all begin with one step. And there you go. You have to decide to make that step. And glad that you did, and glad that you were able to share part of that journey with us this morning here on the Kenai Conversation. Gary Stotler, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Gary Stotler with us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. OutrunYourExcuses.com is the website. Check it out. It's a great story.